Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey, glad to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about a number of subjects, as always, following the money. And in this case, the idea is we were talking before the session about financial planning. And a financial planner once told me to make sure your last paycheck, your last check bounces. And then somebody asked, said, when is that going to be? And that's kind of the theme of today's show, because we're talking with Paul Fort and Beth O'Brien from Long-Term Care Partners. And they have partnered with the federal government to offer long-term care insurance to people. You can, of course, buy it yourself on the outside, but many people, in fact, I think 45,000, is that right, signed up during this recent open season?
Yes, Mike, 45,000 people enrolled within a 12-week period this spring. It was a 20% increase over our existing enrollment, and now over 271,000 people, our members, are enrolled in the federal long-term care insurance program.
Well, just quick story on my part, and then I'm going to ask you guys some basic questions and just let you run with it. My mother was a retired federal worker. She got long-term care insurance, not through this program, but she got long-term care insurance. Her last few years, she'd always been healthy, but she developed Alzheimer's, had to be put in a home, and but the fact that she had long-term care insurance, she had some Social Security, and she had a civil service retirement benefit, so she was in extremely good shape, which means I was in extremely good shape, we as a family, because our expenses were minimal, and her last couple of years were made as pleasant as possible under the circumstances because she had that, and I'm a big fan of long-term care insurance. I think I've been covered since I was 45.
Excellent.
So belt and suspenders. I wish I'd gotten more coverage, but be that as it may. But can you tell me or tell the audience a couple of things? One thing, the open season is over, but you can still get in.
Yes, that's right. The open season event has concluded, but if you're interested in applying for the federal long-term care insurance program, you can do that at any time, and you can do it by contacting our website, ltcfeds.com. You can apply directly online. You can call our service center, and you can talk to a rep. So you can do that at any time, Mike.
Okay. Now, I think a lot of people say, I don't need long-term care insurance because I have an FEHBP, one of the federal employee health benefits programs plans.
Sure.
I have that. There's Social Security, maybe there's Medicaid. So who needs long-term care insurance?
Well, anyone who's actually serious about protecting their retirement plan, I mean, FEHB program, Medicare are excellent ways to pay for skilled care, to go to the doctor's office, to be hospitalized for recuperative care. But that sort of care never pays for just chronic ongoing assistance with daily living that's associated with long-term care or even supervision because of something like your mom had, like Alzheimer's disease. So while there are excellent ways to pay for health care costs, they don't pay for basic assistance or supervision with daily living.
Sure. The assumption here is that you have an acute care crisis. There's a problem. The problem will require intervention. You'll go to the doctor, you'll go to the hospital, and then at a certain point, that situation will be resolved. Long-term care is the kind of problem that you have when you cannot resolve something. And so you are chronically impaired. You are unable to do the kinds of basic activities that all of us take for granted that we need to do each day. And those are the kinds of things that conventional health insurance policies are not designed to address.
What's the difference between a long-term care and a long-term disability insurance?
Disability insurance is typically designed for working-age adults. It's designed to replace a portion of your income if you're no longer able to work. But the issue is that those funds are earmarked to pay for your bills, your mortgage, your rent, your food, your energy costs, and there's usually little to no left over to pay for actual care. It also typically ends at the age of 65, so it's not something you'd bring into retirement when most people would need long-term care.
I know this is an odd question, but is there a proper age to get long-term care insurance? I mean, obviously, you guys sell it. You'd like people to buy it at 30. But is there a magic age?
Actually, Mike, we don't encourage people to buy it at 30. Our typical buyer is about 52 years of age on the active side, a little older on the retired side. During this recent open season, the average age was 53. That seems to us to be a very good age to think about it, because it's an age at which people are beginning to develop some health issues. They are not that far, many of them, from retirement. In many instances, their need for life insurance is less. They may have children who are grown. And it's a good way to it's a good time to start thinking very seriously mm-hmm. about your retirement if you haven't begun doing that already, and then to think about what could turn that retirement upside down. And long-term care is probably the greatest unfunded liability the average American family faces, but they don't think of it that way.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that the leading cause of bankruptcy in this country is because of medical bills.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound about right?
Well, the cost of long-term care is very, very steep, as you know. You were talking about hospitalization and the problem that people have who don't have health insurance. But long-term care can be equally steep. Beth, you can probably cite some average numbers, but they're really quite shocking.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at nursing homes, the Metro D.C. area, it could range anywhere, and these are average, from about 85,000 to over 90,000 annually. Only about 9% or about 10% of our claims are our nursing home claims. So mm-hmm. If it comes to facility care, most people are really opting for assisted livings nowadays, where they can still live a very independent life and still call in help when mm-hmm. needed. In this area, they range anywhere from 4,200 to about 5,000 a month or so. And what retirees have to think of is that this is the sort of funding that's going to be diverted from their retirement annuity. And is there mm-hmm. enough to go out the door to pay for these costs, but also maintain any sort of standard of living for a spouse or partner at home? Is there enough to go around? And we hope people will look at this early and buy this when the costs are more affordable over
now,
the long term.
Now, home health care is a little less expensive, yep. but still significant. And it's interesting to note that in the federal long-term care insurance program, the vast majority of claimants are actually using home or community-based care, either on a formal basis through a home health agency or on an informal basis through a neighbor, a friend, or a family member.
Yep.
The cost of that is less, but it is still significant. And if you are living on a fixed income, if you have an annuity and you have some savings, but you have to pay upwards of $25,000 to $40,000 a year for home health care so that you can stay in your home, and that is not uncommon in any metropolitan area of the United States, you can see the cash flow problem you're going to have. Something will have to give.
Mm. Well, I would assume most people want to stay in their home.
They do.
And that's why the percentage is so high.
Yeah.
So that means that, and they're going to love hearing this, but that one of my four adult children, that the insurance would actually pay them to help take care of me.
Yep, it's called the informal care benefit, and you can read all of this stuff online at ltcfeds.com. But informal caregivers include, as Paul said, friends, neighbors, fellow church members, also family members. The one caveat, though, is if you utilize a family member per se, we cap that at 500 days per the life of the policy. However, if you use any other informal caregiver, you can use those folks for the entire length of the policy.
Okay. And if it's a family member, it should not be someone who is a part of your household to begin with, living there.
Okay.
And then, because we want to obviously discourage this from being a sort of supplementary kind of income.
This would be somebody who lives near you, family member.
They could actually move in after you become qualified.
I see.
Yeah, they could.
Benefits.
Yeah,
right.
If that's easier.
That would make sense. But you don't want them living there at the time.
This happens. But if you had a son or daughter who was willing to move from another state to mm-hmm. come to, say, Washington, D.C., that would be perfectly acceptable.
Yep.
Tell me how a policy works. I mean, what you guys offer in the federal program.
Well, I think I want to start with what people buy. How do you buy a policy? And I think Paul will probably take over as to what you get for it, basically. But one thing we did during the open season is we simplified the decision-making process. It really does come down to just three simple decisions. A daily benefit amount, how much you want the company to pay each day for your care. A benefit period, how long you want that care to last for. And inflation protection, which is how you want to grow the policy to keep up with the cost of care and inflation. It's just three choices. And we give examples, again, on the website, or you could call the 1-800-LTC-FEDS number to find out how much care costs in your area. You can build the policy around what care costs in your area. You can buy more or less. But basically, during the open season, people bought solid, affordable, middle-of-the-road coverage.
Let me ask you a little bit more about that. We need to take a short break here. Yep. Be right back on 1500 AM.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit GovCom with two M's, show.org, and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Are you a mid-career professional thinking about improving your digital skills? Or maybe you're trying to retool with a focus on using social networking? American University's online certificate in digital media skills allows you to work full-time while gaining digital media skills to advance in your career or reposition yourself in the job market. The digital future is here. Learn more about American University's graduate certificate in digital media skills at american.edu/soc.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
In honor of Veterans Day, join host Jane Norris at Fed Central on Wednesday, November 2nd and 16th at 11:30 a.m. as Charlie Huebner, Chief of Paralympics for the U.S. Olympic Committee, and Mark Goulart, Principal at Deloitte, discuss the importance of helping injured military personnel and veterans in their recovery and transition through a number of adapted sports therapy programs. Tune in to Deloitte's Fed Central program Wednesday, November 2nd and 16th at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Join senior government leaders from CMS, NIH, HHS, VA, and NHS at AFSEA Bethesda's 4th Health IT Day, November 2nd at the Mayflower Renaissance Hotel in D.C. Discussions will include managing security for a mobile point of care, joint electronic health records, federal health regulations and procurements, and big data management. AFSEA Bethesda thanks premier sponsors Accenture, Booz Allen Hamilton, Intel, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Northrop Grumman, SAS, and Vanjant. Register at AFSEABethesda.org/HealthITday.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. We're talking about long-term care insurance today. Who needs it? Who has it? What it does, what it doesn't do. I'm talking with Paul Fort and Beth O'Brien. They are with Long-Term Care Partners based in, you're in Portsmouth, New Hampshire?
Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Okay,
that's right.
So this is a sunny, warm day down here for you guys.
It is. We're enjoying it.
Yes. And the government program now, I believe it has 275,000 policyholders.
271,000.
And that's an increase. You picked up 45,000 during the...
An increase of about 20% over where
right.
we were.
Before the break, but Beth and I were talking, I was asking you about the things that people look for,
yep.
and you say the daily benefit,
yep.
the length of the contract.
Yes,
is it going to be
benefit period? Yep.
And then the inflation protection. What's the range in that?
For daily benefit amount, you can choose anywhere between $100 and $450 in $50 increments. And during the open season, the most popular choices were what the $150 daily benefit amount that would cover in the Metro DC area, assisted living facilities per day. In home health care per day, about 89% of our claimants are in those receiving care in those two settings.
About 43% of all people chose that 150.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the clear winner, basically. $200 daily benefit amount was also popular, coming in about 30% of applicants. So they're really choosing that middle-of-the-road number, and both are appropriate for this part of the country. For benefit period, there's a range. You can choose either a 2-year, a 3-year, a 5-year, or an unlimited benefit period. And we had very few people buy unlimited. Mm-hmm. I think only around 9%. People did not buy the catalog policy. Mm-hmm. They bought, what did you call it, the Chevy?
Well, seriously, we talked quite a bit about this on earlier programs with Mike. And I think it shows that people understood what the risk was, and we're looking to cover the majority of their risk, and to do so that was within their budget. And don't forget these benefits, if you buy the automatic compound inflation, which a lot of people did, they're going to go up every year. So, yes, I referred to it, I guess, as a solid Chevy as opposed to a Cadillac plan.
My cobalt is not offended by that. Well, then I did well, I guess, when I bought my policy. It was a long time ago with the Washington Post,
yeah.
And I think my daily benefit is 150.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in the range.
Yep. It is in the range.
Very good. Okay, and then the inflation protection is obvious. If inflation goes up 3%, the daily benefit goes up by 3%, right?
Well, actually, there's three choices, for inflation protection. A 4% automatic compound, a 5% automatic compound. Every single year, benefits will ramp up by either 4 or 5%.
Automatically.
Yep. Oh. And then the third option is sort of what you described, the future purchase option, in which every 2 years we extend an offer, and that offer is based on whatever the CPIU has done. Basically, but just a couple numbers. Going back to the benefit period, most people chose a 3-year benefit period. Again, solid, affordable coverage. Here's one I like to see. 58% of the people chose a 4% automatic compound inflation option. It's excellent coverage. And it's more affordable than the 5%. They really gravitated towards that middle option.
Well, yes, Beth. And if you looked at the website, you knew that the average rate of inflation over the past 40 years was closer to 4% than it was to 5%. And, of course, people know that we're in a very low inflation and low interest rate environment. So I think all things considered, they thought, well, this is a sensible thing to do.
Right.
It's solid. It's going to be going up 4% compounded, and it costs less money.
So the average person then with you now bought the – $150 daily benefit.
3-year benefit period.
3 years.
Yep.
And the automatic
compound at 4%.
Okay.
Yep. Average premium was about $125 a month or so. Keep in mind, though, you can always buy more, you can buy less, but that's what really the averages were for the open season.
When people went online and looked at your site, and I know you had millions or more than a million visitations, could I look on there, for example, and see how long the average person is in a nursing home or under long-term care? For instance, does it typically last 2 years, 3 years?
It depends on the care setting. Industry numbers over the last number of years, home care, you know, the average has been around 4.5 years for home care. Maybe two and a half years almost for nursing home care. So, again, that 3- and 5-year benefit period are really right in the mix with what care actually looks like.
And don't forget, you know, a 3-year benefit period isn't strictly just 3 years if you don't get care every single day for 365 days a year. If you get it less frequently, and that is often the case with people, your 3-year period could extend beyond 3 to 3.5, even 4 years, because what you don't use stays in your pool. You don't lose it.
Okay, it rolls over.
So you have a little bit of flexibility there. That it's not like it's 3 years and it's hard and fast. It's only 3 years if it's absolutely every day of the week. for 365 days a year.
Well, this is such grim stuff. You know, yeah. It throws everybody way beyond midlife crisis.
Yeah.
But I have heard several people refer to it as it's a Christmas present for their kids.
Absolutely.
It's a gift to your children or your loved ones.
Absolutely, because most people, I spoke with a gentleman yesterday, and he was telling me about the fact that he had enrolled in the federal program early on, he and his wife. He was with the Air Force, and they had both had serious problems caring for their parents, and they didn't want to put their children through that same experience. So I think it is a good way to think about it. In fact, some people who buy life insurance for their children, thinking that they need to have that in force, should actually consider looking at how much life insurance they have, particularly if they've paid off their mortgage, if they're getting closer to retirement, if their children are off on their own. They could divert some of those funds that they're using for life insurance, which is really designed to protect the family during your working years and to replace that income that you're bringing in, and say apply some of it toward long-term care, where you might actually be helping your family out tremendously, not only financially, but with respect to caregiving, care coordination, assessment, all of those things that you have to do if you have a dependent parent.
You know, having this sort of coverage never replaces the care that families give.
Yeah.
It just allows them to do it longer and better. As an adult daughter, my parents have long-term care insurance. It allows me to supervise and monitor their care from 3 hours away, but I don't have to be there every single day rolling up my sleeves and providing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would if I had to, but I don't have to. I have more options, basically.
So they gave you that gift. And
they did, after I sat down and talked to them 10 years ago and told them to do it.
Yes, that's right. Well, pass it on. Somebody like me, I'm a private sector. I'm not eligible for this program. Who is eligible to get into the federal program?
Yep, and active federal employees, postal employees, also annuitants, active and retired members of the uniformed services. Basically, that's how we define the federal family. Basically, if anyone has any questions about that, I mean, they can certainly go to our website or call the 1-800-LTC-FEDS number. But the good rule of thumb is, if you're eligible for the FEHB program on the civilian side, then you're eligible to apply to the federal long-term care insurance program.
Now, the open season, the current open season, is over. Do you know when there'll be another one?
No, we don't. That really is a policy decision that must be made by OPM. I think it's safe to say that if there is another one, it won't be in the immediate future. So anyone who has missed this open season and is thinking about rounding out their retirement plan and maybe tuned in a little late, they should definitely take a look at it now. The thing to note is that there is no difference in terms of the cost of the program. It's not like a sale that you missed, mm-hmm. and now you have to pay full price. It's the same rate. The only difference is that you will have to answer more questions on an application, and those questions could ask you for doctors and other references, other evidence of your health. But this is as good a time as any, right after open season, to enroll,
yeah.
To apply. If you're thinking about it, there's no reason to wait.
And this was the first open season we'd had in 9 years, so I certainly would not wait around another 9 years because costs are based on age.
Well, that's a good point. As Paul said, you didn't miss a sale. There are just a couple more hurdles now to get in.
That's right.
By doing this.
It's fully underwritten.
And it's 9 years since the last open season.
Yes.
That's amazing. Why did they call it? The economy changed?
Why did they call it? Because it had been a long time since we had the initial open season. We wanted to create greater awareness about long-term care, as many more feds were talking about retiring. We wanted to make the pool even larger than it is, because, of course, when you have a larger pool, you spread your risk more evenly over a larger number of people. You can also improve your administrative efficiencies and your costs, because now you have a larger base over which to spread systems and fixed costs and so forth. So there were many good reasons for doing it. And, you know, the net result is that the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program Experience Fund is bigger and stronger and more stable than it was.
Well, Beth and Paul, thank you so much for being with us and flying down here from sunny Portsmouth. And what's your website again? We'll post it as well.
It's ltcfeds.com. And for folks who are interested, we have a webinar series starting November 2nd every Wednesday. And that link is ltcfeds.com/webinar.
Okay, and remember, we're on our webpage here, so you can get it anytime.
And, Mike, could I just take a second to thank you for all that you've done this year to increase awareness about the problem of long-term care.
I'm a believer.
This is very valuable.
I wish I could get in your program.
You.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back here on 1500.
Thanks, Mike.
Stay tuned. I'm going to be talking with Steve Losey about what Congress is likely to do to your benefits. Be right back.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news, Geico offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right, Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Defense Department is getting ready to hand out $30 million in grants to test cutting-edge energy technologies. The Pentagon's head of installation energy says the department was overwhelmed by the number and quality of proposals it got from industry as it tries to turn military bases into test beds for clean energy technology. Concepts DOD wants to test include smart microgrids and energy storage technology, renewable energy generation, and advanced technologies to improve building energy efficiency.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
WashingtonCaps.com is the destination for behind-the-scenes coverage of your Washington Capitals. Get the most comprehensive Caps coverage with in-depth previews and analysis for every game. And blog, Twitter, and Facebook updates all day, every day. Check out Caps 365, where you can view all the best goals, saves, and hits, and access exclusive player interviews, press conferences, and much more. Check it all out on WashingtonCaps.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
We live in uncertain times. More than ever, federal agencies rely on TASC to accomplish the most important missions and protect America's way of life. Few in the world can do what the experts at TASC do. Trusted partners, honest counselors, TASC's highly specialized problem solvers use rare knowledge and deep experience to provide advanced systems engineering, integration, and decision support services that the U.S. government depends on to keep the country safe and secure. TASC, working for you and the nation. TASC.com.
In the midst of the debate over unmanned drones, a computer scientist says robots might actually be programmed with ethics to save lives. We can engineer robots to be stronger than us, go places we can't, sense and process information more quickly. And Ron Arkin of Georgia Tech says,
robots can ultimately be more humane than human beings in military situations.
He says they can be programmed to strictly follow the laws of war and rules of engagement, and they won't act out of fear or frustration.
Robots, or unmanned systems for that matter, have no inherent right of self-defense. They don't have to shoot first and ask questions later.
And Arkin says they can mimic guilt, adjusting future actions based upon battle damage assessment data. But he admits these ideas are controversial and so far have only been tested in lab simulations. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm going to be talking with Steve Losey from the Federal Times. Steve is a senior writer for the Federal Times, and he's been tracking all things of interest to feds for a long time now. Steve, are you there?
I'm here. How are you doing,
Mike? Hey, thank you for coming and for being with us. Nice to have some company. Steve, I was watching a nature show the other night, and there was a herd of gazelles or antelopes or something, and this lone cheetah got in it. And the cheetah's faster than the antelopes even, and it has claws and teeth, but it couldn't catch anything because it was looking around and it was confused by all that was going on, all the action. And I have a feeling, I wonder if you feel like that cheetah. I sometimes dream that's who I am. There's so much going on the federal beat that I find it virtually impossible to track and keep up with.
Oh, yeah. I completely get where you're coming from. Sometimes there's so many things coming. I go, well, where do I start? You know, there's only so much space in the paper each week. What do you want me to concentrate on? So yeah, there's just I've never seen the amount of news and proposals affecting, in most cases adversely affecting feds and the seniority of the people kind of throwing these proposals around is something that I've never seen before either. I mean, just the other day, Rick Perry, the presidential candidate, he came out with his own proposal on federal on budget cutting, and one of the things that he calls for is freezing hiring and freezing pay for federal employees until the budget is balanced. And I mean, it's now a presidential campaign issue: federal salaries, federal staffing levels, and that's something that is kind of unprecedented in my memory.
Well, this morning I was looking at the bulletin the federal managers puts out for its people, and I saw some new horror proposals that I hadn't seen before. I was looking at your paper, the Federal Times, and there's some things that have come out that I haven't seen before. And it seems like they're coming from all different directions, from this commission, from that commission, from the Blair House, from the White House. Now the Government Oversight and Reform Committee, I guess last week, made its recommendations. And typically, you think of this committee as kind of protecting the federal workforce. When Tom Davis of Virginia was chairman, it was very helpful to feds. When Henry Waxman was chairman, it was very helpful to feds. That dynamic has changed, and some of the recommendations it made to the Deficit Reduction Committee are really draconian.
They are wide ranging. They would cut deeply, and there are not a whole lot of people out there who are happy about what Congressman Issa has proposed.
Can you tick off some of those?
Sure. The high five is high up on the list. Higher contribution rates for FERS and CSRS employees. FERS employees would bump up from 0.8%. This is contribution rates to their pension plans, that is.
Mm-hmm.
FERS would tick up from 0.8% to 7%. CSRS would tick up from 7% to 10%. ICE is talking about ending the defined benefit pension plan for FERS employees, and I can go into more detail on that in a bit. Cutting the workforce by 10%, a pay freeze through 2015, eliminating step increases. It kind of runs the whole gamut of proposals in ICE's plan.
And then next we have the Deficit Reduction Committee, which is going to make its report or recommendations around Thanksgiving. And then the Congress is supposed to act on them sometime in December.
Well, there's a lot of ifs there. It's far from certain that the super committee is actually going to settle on anything because we haven't heard a whole lot out of them recently. And there's a lot of people who are kind of worrying, A lot of times they say no news is good news. Well, I guess that depends on your perspective. There's no news coming out, and that has some people thinking that maybe they're deadlocked. The issue of revenues has been a major stumbling block for the last year or so, and that may end up scuttling what the super committee is supposed to do. However, if the way it's supposed to work is, yes, they are supposed to come out with their recommendations by around Thanksgiving, about a month from now, and then a vote by around Christmas time. And so if they are going to come out with some recommendations, if they are going to agree on something, we'll know within the next couple of weeks.
Well, you're right about the if word, because there's no guarantee that they will do anything. They do not have to do anything, correct?
That's – well, yeah, if they don't do anything, that's when sequestration starts. About $1.2 trillion gets automatically cut from defense would have a large cut, cut out of it. But, you know, even that's not certain. I mean, John McCain, I believe, was saying, you know, well, if sequestration happens, we'll just go back and put the money back in, which gets us right back to square one.
Well, you know, there's been this campaign, and I guess it would be fair to label it as an anti-federal worker campaign, started really August a year ago, and there was a story, there were a number of stories about federal workers being overpaid, federal workers being paid more than their counterparts in the private sector, the benefit packages out of line, And a variety of things have come up with this. And when you look at the how the situation has changed in the last couple of years, I heard on the radio this morning the mayor of St. Louis said that because of the sales tax revenue generated by the World Series, and we're talking about three or four baseball games here, but because of that, he would not have to immediately have two-day furloughs of city employees. I mean, they're that close to going over, and I think this weighs on Congress's mind. It's not just a federal employee issue, but they have constituents back home in the state and local governments who've taken major hits in both benefits, layoffs, and furloughs, and there's more of them than there are of the feds.
That's right. That's right. I mean, it's ugly all over. And I think what's happening to state and local employees, those problems are falling less heavily on federal employees. But right now, so far, the only serious issues have been the 2-year pay freeze and some buyouts and furloughs from time to time. But I feel like more is coming down the pike.
Well, you mentioned it, and this is all on federaltimes.com. It's on your front page story today in the Federal Times. But you mentioned some of the things that the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee recommended, or at least Chairman Issa and the Republican wing of it. This raising the contribution rate for people under FERS, they now pay less than 1% into their pension system. That would go to 7%. Mm-hmm. And the CSRS people who already pay 7 would be raised to 10%. So that would be a 7% and a 10% respectively permanent cut in take-home pay, wouldn't it? Is my math off?
I think for CSRS it would be more like a 3% cut from where it is now.
3% cut from what it is now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
it would be a cut in take-home pay.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's got the unions and some of the employee and management representatives very angry.
Yeah, well, and they do have a point. They say we've already taken a hit with 2-year pay freeze, and now they're talking about extending it another 3 years. Correct?
That's right. The groups like the Federal Postal Coalition have been saying that in multiple letters to the Super Committee and to lawmakers, saying we've already sacrificed, we've already given $60 billion by having this 2-year pay freeze, so you shouldn't cut anymore because we've already given. But while I can understand that, I don't think that's going to be enough. I think that those pleas are going to fall on deaf ears, especially with some of the conservatives who are very skeptical, who feel that feds are vastly overpaid.
Well, I know some time ago your paper, the Federal Times, reported that right after the pay freeze was imposed, you said that even with the pay freeze, a large number of federal workers, and I believe it was maybe a third each year, would still be getting pay raises in the form of those within grade or longevity step increases, which are generally worth about 3%. Now I understand from what you're saying that they're, they being the Congress, are talking about eliminating in grades as well.
That's right. That's one thing that's in Congressman Issa's plan, is eliminating step increases.
Well, one thing that we haven't seen, maybe shouldn't even mention it if they've forgotten about it, is this, the chained COLA. Can you explain what that is, what it would do, and maybe and where it is?
Yeah. Right now, it's a change. They're talking about changing the way future cost of living adjustments are determined for retired employees' pensions. Right now, they use the Consumer Price Index, what's called the CPIW. They're talking about changing it to the chain CPI. Basically, the chain CPI, the CPI measures changes in wages, and what the chain CPI would do would take into account the fact that when apples go up, you might change your buying habits and switch to entirely different kinds of fruit.
Okay, I call it steak to dog food, downsizing.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey,
exactly.
Can we take a short break here, Steve? We'll be right back and some more of this horror list. Be right back here on 1500 AM.
Special conversation about the F-35 program on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, this Thursday, October 27th at noon. The show will include a conversation with Tom Burbidge, Executive VP and GM of F-35 Program Integration, Ed O'Donnell, Pratt & Whitney, F-135 and F-119 Business Development, and John Rambo, Lockheed Martin Program Management VP. Moderating the show is Federal Drive host Tom Temin. Tune in this Thursday at noon for a special conversation about the F-35 program.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract Series 83500.
Retirement is expensive, but dinner won't be because it's on me. Hi, I'm Mark Tabron, host of How to Protect and Grow Your Money on Federal News Radio. Join me for an informative dinner seminar at Rips Casual Dining on October the 27th in Bowie, Maryland. We'll talk about ways to help you disaster-proof your retirement. Call 1-800-783-1564 to make a reservation. Seating is limited, so call now, 1-800-783-1564. To learn more, listen Saturday mornings at 10:30 a.m. for How to Protect and Grow Your Money on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Nova Daily public policy consultant at Wiley Rhine commented during the panel discussion, the cybersecurity dilemma, incentives to drive change rather than reactive response.
It is a global playing field out there, and no matter whether your business is located in Iowa or Bangladesh or Beijing, you can be subject to the same vulnerabilities. Just a broad sphere and spectrum of ways that bad actors can get into your system is unbelievable.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. Today, computer attacks are more frequent, distributed, easy to mount, persistent, and disruptive than ever before. Some sectors are doing a better job than others in proactively addressing these concerns, though most do so following an attack. Booz Allen Hamilton believes that incentives which may or may not currently exist can stimulate greater corporate investment in proactive cybersecurity protection measures. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS-7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. And if you're a federal worker, you may want to, this show is archived on our homepage, you may want to play it over Thanksgiving because it really is a chamber of horrors today, but we're not trying to scare you. We're trying to inform you. I've been talking with Steve Losey. He is a senior writer for the Federal Times, and Steve has been covering the Deficit Reduction Committee and all the various other groups that have been looking at ways to save money and trim the deficit, and many of them have been focusing heavily on the federal government. As you know, federal pay has been frozen for 2 years. Steve says there's a proposal to make that a five-year freeze, total of 5 years, raise your retirement contributions, which would reduce your take-home pay. And we were talking about the chained COLA, which is, kind of sounds like an X-rated film, but that is in fact a different sort of yardstick that the proponents of it claim that it better measures inflation and actual living costs because people adjust to the times, and therefore this gives you a better measure of what they are buying, what they're spending for it. The critics say it's a way to do it on the cheap, that it would reduce future cost of living adjustments by as much as, I think, a half a percentage point each year, each time there is one. That's one of those that we haven't heard mentioned lately, but it's one of the things that federal and postal and retiree leaders fear most.
That's right. And, you know, this, I believe we first started talking about this last year when the White House's deficit commission, the Simpson-Bowles Commission, included it in some of their recommendations. And then it sort of kind of went, kind of fell back under the radar. But just in the last couple of weeks, Senator Ron Johnson, the ranking Republican on the Senate Federal Workforce Subcommittee, he re-raised this issue in his deficit reduction plan. So it's now, you know, it's kind of back on the table. It's something that people are discussing, and I would not be surprised if a change to how the COLA is derived does end up being part of whatever slate of changes affecting federal employees gets enacted.
Well, that would certainly save a lot more money than switching from the high three to the high five, for instance.
I believe so. I don't have the numbers crunched in front of me, but yeah, I believe it would save a lot.
The other thing that we haven't heard from in a while, but it was proposed by one of those groups, was changing the ratio, the split, how much the government and how much the employer, the retiree, pays for their health insurance. Right now, if you're a regular federal worker or a retiree, you pay about 30%, give or take a little, for your health insurance premiums, and that remains constant. Even if the health premiums themselves go up, the split between the government and the individual remains the same. Under this proposal that I came out of one or another of these commissions, the government share of the premium would decrease gradually each year. And I believe, and I think we talked about this last week, at one point the National Active and Retired Federal Employees estimated that within 5 or 6 years, the individuals could be paying half of their total premium.
Yeah, that's right. It would, this kind of voucher plan would, Basically, right now, the federal government pays a certain percentage amount. Under the voucher plan that has been floated, the federal government would pay a fixed dollar amount, and that would kick up a certain percentage, I believe, GDP plus one each year. But critics say that regular health premium inflation would leave that in the dust. So very quickly, federal employees would be paying a much larger chunk of their health care premiums than they do now.
I think we've frightened people enough trying not to. What else are you working on? What do you want to talk about?
Well, one thing before we move on from the mm-hmm. writing, I think this is important. The issue is to change how the change to FERS pensions. Congressman Issa wants to replace the FERS pension, defined benefit pension, with another defined contribution plan, which is very similar to the TSP. Basically, there would be two defined contribution plans, the TSP and this new plan, working in conjunction. Now, NARF is concerned that would expose federal employees to too much risk. So NARF's not in favor of this, but that is out there. But yeah, aside from that, we are kind of taking a look at the health insurance open season is getting ready to start. That's going to begin November 14th. And I've got some stats that show that federal employees over the last couple of years, as these health care premiums have increased a good bit, they've definitively shifted away from the higher cost plans to the more lower cost basic versions of Blue Cross Blue Shield, GEHA, things like that. So that's another thing we're looking into. And we're also kind of keeping track of the labor management partnerships and how there's some kind of concerns that some of these partnerships haven't had as much results as some of them would have liked. And there's some rumblings on the conservative side that maybe these partnerships aren't the best thing. Maybe they give unions too much power. So I'm seeing some there may be some efforts to kind of scale back or perhaps end these partnerships if the Obama administration loses next year.
What about the Postal Service? Always seems to be some unhappy statistic coming out of them.
Yeah, the Postal Service, Sean has been covering that. I'm not 100% up on what exactly is the latest on the Postal Service, but there's never... These days, there's never good news.
Never good news. And they're talking about downsizing, eliminating it. Is it 220,000 jobs?
That's right.
And eliminating, I believe, more than 1,000 post offices and stations?
Yeah, there are steep cuts coming to the Postal Service. They are talking about changing their setting up, pulling out of FEHBP, pulling out of federal retirement programs, setting up their own health care, their own retirement programs, which they say would provide more choice, better options that the private sector offers that FEHBP does not. So yeah, there are a lot of changes in the works for the Postal Service if the Postal Service has its way.
Steve, what Congress and to some extent the administration has been doing to federal workers and postal workers would seem to be a recruiting godsend for the federal and postal unions. Do you have any indication that membership is increasing?
You know, I don't know that. They hold on to their membership numbers very tightly. We haven't seen any new ones lately, but that will be something interesting to keep an eye on.
Yeah, the unions always wisely point out how many people they represent, but that's not the same as dues-paying, card-carrying members.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So coming up next week?
We will... what do we have coming up next week?
Yes.
I'm not really sure what's coming
up. Make you tip your hand here. That was a sneaky way for me to find out what you guys are working on. But listen, thank you very much, Steve Longsley, for being with us and this rundown. Remember, we are archived. If you want to listen again, if you catch some numbers on this or the long-term care situation, we're archived on our homepage. And we'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 o'clock. Have a good weekend. Stay safe.